everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast. I am pleased to have on the line today Richard Delaney, who is the musical director of the Mambo Kings. They are coming into Chicago on Wednesday, August 7th. For a special performance at Millennium Park on the Prixter Pavilion. And they are going to be performing with the Grant Park Orchestra for a program that's called Hot Latin Nights. David, Richard, thanks so much for jumping on right now for a few minutes.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
And no problem.
So I guess my first question before we start talking about the back end and all the background of the Mambo Kings and the band and everything, because as we talked a little bit before I started the podcast, I mean, it looks like an all-star band, so we've got to talk
that. Yep.
But I'll tell you, the music repertoire you guys are going to be performing on Wednesday, August 7th, is Tito Puente and Dave Brubeck, okay,
yep.
And then Pop Strains of the Beatles, and then
yep.
Gershwin's Cuban Overture. So that sounds like quite a mix.
Well, we're not doing the Cuban Overture. That's the orchestra's opener.
Okay. All right, good.
Yeah,
okay.
We don't play in that because I tell you, it's very difficult.
I was going to say. I was like,
so, you know, we don't like to work that hard. You know?
So you guys are going to be focused on Tito Puente and Dave Brubeck, and then you're also doing some things with the Beatles, or is that also the orchestra still?
No, everything else is orchestra material that I've arranged or composed, because we're also doing three of my own compositions.
Wow. Okay. So,
the whole idea basically is to present Latin music in as many different forms, because we like, our percussionists are students of the lore. You know, they go back to the Afro-Cuban origins and the original drum beats and all mm-hmm. this stuff before Latin music became, you know, mambo and salsa and stuff like that, which is very urban. We kind of like to get a little nastier with some of that stuff. Well, you know, I mean, you're a drummer, you know that. I mean, the repertoire I picked is just the stuff that seems to fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Day Tripper works as a cha-cha, you know. And that's on an album that is out of circulation. It got reviewed by Rebecca Mauleon. Mm-hmm. And she seemed to think that Day Tripper was not a good choice. And it's like, ah, come on, you know? I mean, it works. First, and people recognize it. I mean, you know, El Cumbanchero, for example, is a Latin classic. People might not recognize the title, but they'll recognize the melody.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Rondo, the Brubeck stuff. I mean, we used to do Tito Puente's arrangement of Take Five, which was not in five. Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was in four. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that version, but okay.
Yeah. Google it later when you get a minute, man. I mean, it's a nice little arrangement, but anyways, but my daughter used to take marimba lessons at the Eastman School, at the community school, and her teacher was the marimba player, for the RPO, the Rochester Philharmonic. And, you know, and we became friends, and I asked her, I said, you know, if I wrote something that featured marimbas, would you guys play it? And, oh, yeah, we love it. So I know Blue Rondo, and I figured, you know, that would sound great with two marimbas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that beat. And then I arranged it basically exactly like the Brubeck Quartet plays it.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
You know, but then when they switch over, when they switch over to the swing section for solos, we don't swing. We do a song, a huahuanco, you know, a salsa beat.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But from the beginning of the tune to where the solos begin, it's basically right off the album. I mean, it's a great composition. It's tricky. It's a lot of fun, and it always gets a rise out of the audience because it's not something you expect.
No. Well, and they know the tune, and then when it goes into something else, it probably just starts grooving, and everybody starts really loving it.
Yeah, and then we switch back, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn, but it's been a hit with audiences every time we play it.
How often have you played with orchestra? I mean, looking over the bio of the group and stuff, you guys have done this stuff before, but I mean, it's got to be like completely you have to shift gears a little bit, right? When you're working with an orchestra, or you're
Yeah. That's a brilliant question. Yeah, we do, because they're sensitive, you know.
Sure. Well, and they groove a little bit differently.
Yeah, they see two drummers and they think, oh my gosh, we're all going to hell in a basket. You know? but what we've done, Jeff Tyzik, the conductor, was a bit of a mentor to me. He's the guy that got me writing for orchestra. Our orchestral debut was back in 1996.
Okay.
With the Rochester Philharmonic. And then we started, while I was doing some of the booking, we started touring with, you know, we played in Baltimore, we played with the Detroit Symphony, we played in Naples, Florida. But then the business went down a bit, and then I got an agent who works exclusively with orchestras, and all of a sudden the bookings started coming back. So in the 2000s, we've been working pretty steadily since about 2007.
Well, and that's one of those interesting things too, because talking about musicians, and I would imagine that you, with this kind of a niche sound and this kind of a niche, let's just like market, right? Because you can work with an orchestra. I mean, that lends itself to now you can perform in some of these concert series, some of these different things, but bring that music to people that might not really know it, because maybe they're there to hear the symphony and they're going to come out anyways. And then all of a sudden they see, the Afro-Cuban and they see you guys performing and they're like, whoa, I've got to check out that music. So I love it because it's almost like you're opening up a new audience.
Yeah, I remember the first time we played in Dallas, maybe 2005, and the Dallas manager, after the concert, came up and said, you guys attracted a completely different demographic than we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
We basically, and please, I hope nobody takes offense at this, but basically we attracted Mexican yuppies.
Uh-huh.
Young couples with children that wouldn't go to see the Dallas Symphony play Beethoven, but they came out to hear us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really happy at that. So yeah, we do it. We're a good band for kids too. We're a family band.
Yeah,
well, they respect percussion. Children do.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, it's interesting because I'm running a jazz fest this weekend on Saturday, and we have the headliner, and it's Conjunto is the name of the band. It's an Afro-Cuban band, and three drummers, and the kids, they go bananas because they start grooving and they see everybody doing, there's action happening. But I love the fact that what you're going to be doing on Wednesday, August 7th, down in at the Brixter Pavilion in Millennium Park. I mean, that lends itself to, there's a lot of families that go to that to begin with, but now I think it's going to draw even more people. But I love it because there's so many cross things, as you know. I'm sure you've played in symphonies just without even doing this, and I'm sure a lot of the percussionists in the band have. And, I think a lot of people don't understand that a lot of the musicians, cross genres all the time. So when you guys are performing, it's like somewhat natural to be working with strings because you're used to that. But then being able to combine this kind of music with the orchestra just opens up another audience, which only helps everybody in the music business.
It does. I mean, like one of my compositions is based on Peruvian music, and it's in 3/4 time, and it's very seldom do you hear. I mean, there's a Cuban beat called Africano, which is a 6/8 beat, like Afro blue, but a lot of people don't know that has its roots. That type of thing has its roots in Afro-Cuban drumming, so I kind of use that, and so. Kids are exposed to just music from a country that maybe they can't even find on the map,
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background and the background of the band, because, just looking over your bio that you have up on the band's website, you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, it's incredible, right?
Yeah.
You're teaching. You've gotten degrees from, you went to Eastman School of Music.
Sure.
Very prestigious.
Yeah.
You've played with the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. You also played with Paquito de Rivera. First of all, I've interviewed him, and talk about somebody with a lot of energy.
He's an amazing guy.
Oh,
he is terrific.
God, just tons
of
energy.
And he can play clarinet better than any clarinetist in the country. I'm not.
I believe classical, Latin, jazz, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So how did, performing with somebody like that, and then now you've moved over, and then you started the band, I think, in 95, do I have that right, when you guys
put the band I started playing with a salsa band back in the 70s. And that's how I started arranging. I was writing, I was arranging horns and strings for like jingles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started arranging for the salsa band, and I kind of stayed with them for about 15 years. And we opened for some big bands, Ray Barreto and Sonora Ponceña. We also backed up a lot of singers. And I just kind of got that feel for this type of music. Mm-hmm. Our percussionists and our bassists are, especially Freddie, who's our drummer, and Hector, who's our bass player, they're salseros. They accompanied many of the big time singers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we come together, it's really to do a completely different thing, something very unique for us.
Did you? Are these the original guys in the band? I mean, did you?
No. We started out with three percussionists.
Okay.
Many years ago, but then you've been in bands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It just became easier to bring it down to two, mm-hmm. especially when you got guys like Tony and Freddie playing drums, because those guys are terrific.
Yeah, well, it sounds like two guys on each. It sounds like you have four guys, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the band really gelled and came together by the time we recorded our first album, which was around 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And our bass player was another Eastman guy who played stand up, and that was always my original idea, is to have that kind of a bass, like Cachao, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That sound, but we lost Bob, and very few other bass players can do that,
play
stand up and do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Hector joined the band, and our bass player, he joined the band in 2006. Freddie is the only one that's been there since day one.
Mm, okay.
He played with us in 19 when we went to Vail in 1996, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first gig, and so he's been, that's what, 20 something years. That's a long time. Yeah. And then Tony came into the band. We've all known each other for many years. And John, our sax player, and I have played together in jazz groups and pickup gigs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the group gelled is really because we just started working on this material, and we really liked to do that with each other. We get together and somebody will have an idea. Let's do this tune. So we'll start playing and fooling around. You know, I'm the quote unquote musical director. That just means that I count
to do the interviews with me, right?
Yeah, no, I count off all the tunes.
Oh, okay. Really,
that's my job. You know, but I'll like the Day Tripper thing, for example. I mean, I came in and said I want to do this, and we started working on it, and it kind of became what it is now, just by gigging, by playing out in front of people.
Right. You know, I was going to ask you, with this kind of music, so talking about that, how important is it with this type of music to play with the same guys? Because it's not like, you know, when you play a jazz gig or something, everybody has a concept of what's happening. You can start making it groove, and it happens, and everybody kind of knows. But with this kind of stuff, it just seems to me like the more you play together, the more it starts to groove. And over the years, you guys, it settles into a different level of rhythm in this kind of music.
Yeah, because you pick up each other's quirks and each other's ideas and stuff, so you know what's going to happen. It's very important to have the same guys. We seldom sub out. This morning, as a matter of fact, we played a gig for seniors out in the park in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
You had to set up at 9 in the morning, which is like, oh, come on, you know. But anyway, you know, it's a gig and stuff, and our bass player couldn't make it, so we hired somebody who's played with us already. The sound was a little different. I mean, they're different musicians.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid that played with us is a terrific bassist, and he knows our stuff. So it just kind of... it blended, but it wasn't. I mean, we avoided some of the more difficult tunes.
Sure.
The stuff that has a lot of kicks and stuff that, you know, because we don't like to practice.
You guys have been playing together for so long. I mean, you guys have it together for the most part. Now,
yeah, we we have our book is pretty solid, and we know all the tunes. And every now and then, I'll call a tune we haven't played in a while, and there's a couple of oops moments. We all have them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, boy, I forgot that lick, you know.
So let's talk about the name of the band, Mambo Kings. Obviously, you know, based off.
Yeah.
Is it based off of the movie? Is it based off of Tito Puente? How did this come about?
No, it's based off of the novel that they made into the movie.
Okay.
Oscar Hijuelos is a Cuban-American writer who won a Pulitzer for the novel called The Mambo Kings Play Songs of Love.
Mm, okay.
And which became the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when they made the movie, they obviously, because it's a movie, they concentrated on the music, and that was a terrific soundtrack. But I named it, I formed the band in 1991, originally, and I named it after the novel. And then, you know, I just liked the phrase Mambo Kings.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, and Tito Puente, and the thing is, if you ever heard the Tito Puente Quintet, I mean, that's who we're based on, that type of jamming Latin musicians,
mm-hmm.
you know, that groove on a beat and then solo.
Yep.
And sometimes Tito plays timbales, sometimes Tito plays vibes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, you know, I remember he was in town here probably about 4 or 5 years before he passed away, and I got a chance to see him, and I think that might have been, I don't know, maybe he played 5 tunes the whole night, but the concert was an hour and a half, you know? He had like 12 guys on stage. Everybody that knew him from Chicago kept getting up and jamming with him on stage, and
he was just inviting
him up, and it was unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Did you ever see the movie Calle 54?
No. Uh-uh.
You should, man. It's about the music studio on 54th Street in New York where all of these Latin jazz guys record.
Oh, okay.
And there's one of the tunes is Tito Puente Quintet. I think Hilton Ruiz is his pianist. And it's check it out, Calle 54. It really is amazing. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah.
What they did is they recorded live performances straight to whatever, you know, and it sounds great. And
wow.
It gives you an idea, but Tito was there, and I think he played timbales on that track.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like an all-star cast, you know, all these great New York Latin musicians.
Wow. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. That sounds unbelievable, you know.
I mean, Gatto Barbieri even plays... who else? Ralph Irizarry, Fort Apache Band. I mean, this is all these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What documentation, too, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking over the program here because I got the press release, and just kind of running it down a little bit. It looks like you're playing, you know, you've got Day Tripper, which you mentioned, and Blue Rondo a la Turk. But then you've also got a couple of your originals. And mixing those in. Then I see a Michelle Camilo.
Yeah, that's a solo tune. We do that without anybody. That features our percussionist.
That's kind of like a really burning tune.
Thank you, it is. Yeah, and we like it. We've been playing it for a while.
And you're the piano player, so, you know.
Yeah, well,
good luck,
yeah,
right?
No. I mean, Michelle is one of my favorites, but he's from another planet.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is amazing.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
We do two or three of his tunes. But you know, I mean, I don't take a solo in Caribe. That gives you an idea. John takes a sax solo, which is fantastic, and then we feature both Tony and Freddie. We do eights with them. So
that'll be great. And then of course you're closing it out with Oye Como Va.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah.
That should get the entire crowd going crazy, I'm sure. And you know, the cool thing about this, have you ever done anything at the Brixton Pavilion? I'm sure you've played in Chicago before.
Only once, back in 1985.
Oh, really? You guys haven't been to
Ancient history. Yes, the year the Bears won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, wow.
We were there when the Giants came to visit that weekend.
Oh, no kidding.
And the Bears beat them to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Wow. So you guys haven't played in Chicago at all. Well, they're going to love.
No, this is our debut there. Yeah.
This is you know, Chicago's one of the I think one of the foremost Latin jazz towns in the country. Obviously New York, but Chicago too, because the scene here is incredible. And one of the things that I love about what they do at the Brixton Pavilion is on Wednesday, August 7th. They also have a practice, a rehearsal, an open rehearsal, so people can actually go down at 11 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. in Millennium Park, sit in the pavilion, hang out a little bit, listen to the Mambo Kings, Hot Latin Nights, rehearse with the orchestra and get things together and all that stuff.
I didn't know that. One of my former students, here's a blast from out of nowhere. One of my former students is in Chicago right now. He plays George Washington in Hamilton.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, Tamar, he was my piano student when he was in high school. And then he ended up going to college, and they turned him into a tenor. And he sings opera and stuff. And next thing you know, he's touring with, Porgy and Bess. And now he's got this gig in Chicago.
Wow.
I invited him to the rehearsal, so I'm hoping he can make it.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty cool, too, because they opened that up. Now, they also have, and I don't know if you're a part of this, because I think they do this for the Grant Park Orchestra, but maybe you are a part of this. They do like a pre-concert lecture from 5:30 to 6 for people that want to get background on the group and about the program for the evening and all that. I don't know if you guys are a part of that or not, because sometimes they have some of the guest artists, sometimes they don't. So.
Hold on. That doesn't ring a bell. I know we're talking to some students.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to some kids, which we love to do. We're allowed band, and like I said, kids respect that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be doing anything in any of the schools around there in the summer?
Wednesday is packed tight.
Yeah.
We're done with the rehearsal at 1:30. Then we meet with something called Classical Campers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show starts at 6:30, and then we have a post-concert fundraiser event. So,
oh, okay.
There's nothing scheduled as a lecture.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to playing with the kids, because we've done that all over Rochester. We've lectured to a room full of first graders. That's an experience. They're sitting there like terrified. But Tony, our conga player, is very good with the kids, and he does that a lot in Rochester. He presents clinics. He's all over.
You know, that's something that I always like to ask, and obviously everybody wants to get out. Wednesday, August 7th, 6:30 p.m.,
sure.
The Jay Prixter Pavilion. And also, I was looking this up, and just for everybody listening, you can also purchase advance tickets, meaning it's a free concert, but if you want to sit in the reserve seats and you want to get down in front in the Jay Prixter Pavilion, tickets are only $26, and you can get those at gpmf.org or 312-742-7647. But, you know, one of the things that I always like to ask, especially somebody like you who's performed in all these different genres, traveled all over the place, but then you're also an educator, and you guys are doing lectures and giving back to the community and giving back to kids and trying to get them involved. I mean, how important, because I think a lot of people that are listening just, you know, they show up to a gig, if they're not a musician, they show up to a concert, they say, oh man, these guys are burning, this is unbelievable, they probably sleep till 4 o'clock every day and then get up and make millions of dollars playing on the stage, and that's all they do. And I am here to tell everyone, as I normally do on this show, that is not the case. So,
no, not at all.
But how important is it for you as an educator? Because, I mean, you're teaching, you know, high-level students, I'm sure. But, you know, to get and just kind of get out into the community or get out into places wherever you guys are traveling and connect with younger kids. Because I think that's a huge inspiration, and it really influences them. And you never know who you're going to push into the professional ranks just by that one instance that they talk to you.
Yeah, just to give you an idea, the most common question we get from kids of all ages is, how old were you when you started playing your instrument?
Mm, yep.
So, you know, that gives you an idea of what they're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the five of us, we all have completely different backgrounds. But they latch on to that. They concentrate on that. Hector used to sneak in. His dad played in church, and Hector used to sneak in and catch his band. Freddie's first teacher was his dad. And I think that resonates with these kids, because they don't hear, oh, I went to such and such a school, or I went to this, I went to that. And another question they ask is how much we practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my answer is always not enough, you know. But I explained to them, I said, look, you know, we all practice our instruments by ourselves for years.
Yep.
Then we got together. We all know the same tunes. We just get together and figure out a way, how are we going to play this tune?
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that we can't do that if we haven't had all that practice. I always try to instill in them the idea that this is hard work. And it's not about being a star or a millionaire, which would be nice,
yeah.
You know. But it's about mastering an instrument, which is not easy.
You know, I think it's one of those things too. And since we're talking about this, and of course, everyone's got to get out there on Wednesday, August 7th, to Prixter
yep.
Pavilion, so they can see you guys, since you've already mastered your instrument. But I think that one of the hardest parts about becoming a musician and coming up through the ranks, and you know, being in high school, especially when you get into junior high, high school, really, I think is the key. Where you can go either way, is that all that time alone you have to spend learning how to play this stuff. I mean, that is
yep.
something that, you know, I always try to instill in people and tell them. And yep. when I used to teach, I used to tell them, you know what, just pick the instrument up 15 minutes a day. And then the next week it's going to be 20 and then 30, because you're going to get interested. You can't sit down and
yep.
practice 7 hours and then you're going to be burned out. You'll never do it again until you get into it. And then you're going to be practicing 15 hours a day for a very long time because you're going to want to.
Yeah.
You know, is that kind of your philosophy too for younger kids?
Well, I mean, as a piano teacher, you know, because I teach classical and jazz,
mm-hmm.
And it's two completely different disciplines.
Yep.
You know, the classical music is about the reading, it's about the fingering. Jazz is also about the reading and the fingering, but it's memorizing a lot of chords and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I find that that's what stumps most of my students. Is the amount of mental work that you have to do. You know, you have to know all your chords in every key. And they look at me like I'm nuts, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I tell them, you know, I don't expect you to do it by tomorrow, but I expect you to think this is what I'm going to have to do for the next few years, is master all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you do it? You sit and you play. You just sit and play. You know, there's no magic word. There's no magic method. So my teaching has basically become trying to instill a work ethic in my students.
Well, that's the key for success in anything, but especially in, you know, when you get into the instrument and into music.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
mean, you know, just like what you said, it's that work ethic where I think you have to inch your way in, and then they see shows and they get inspired, and hopefully that can keeps them pushing forward. Because I always tell people,
yep.
you know, YouTube is great, Spotify is fantastic, but it doesn't change the fact that if you want to be a professional musician, you need to go see people perform on a regular basis, because outside
yep.
of just checking out technique, it's the inspiration.
Yep. I mean, I hate to hear the words, oh, I saw this on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, oh, I wish you hadn't, you know. Because I remember one student said, well, I saw Thelonious Monk, he plays like this. And yeah, he's Monk.
Right.
He's the only Monk ever. And he can get away with playing flat-fingered. You're not Monk. You know, it's not going to work for you.
Well, and you know, I think with jazz, and especially with, you know, the Afro-Cuban and the Latin
yeah.
music, it is so different when you get out and see it live, like what you guys are going to be performing. It's so different
yeah.
when you see it live, because if you're in a, especially if you're in a small club, but even at the Prixter Pavilion where there's going to be 8,000-9,000 people, you know,
yeah.
it's one of those things where it, acoustically it's different, the energy is different. You cannot get that off of a recording at all, or even watching
no,
a video.
It's something you're going to notice. I mean, go back to what you asked me about what it's like playing with orchestra. The biggest adjustment we had to make is following them, rather than having them follow us.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the first pieces of advice I got was, the minute you put a drummer in front of an orchestra, you can't hear half of the instruments.
Mm.
And yeah, and it's the truth, you can't. Every now and then I can hear my oboe part. It's like, oh, I wrote an oboe part. Wonderful, I thought I'd done that, you know. But so what we do, and this surprises a lot of classical musicians, we can play very softly, very gently, and follow them. Because there's a couple of moments during a couple of my arrangements where we have to do what they're doing, otherwise it's a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
And we learn that the hard way. We learn that by getting into a mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the only way to do it.
And so... I don't know what the point was I was trying to make.
Well, no, but I think you're right. You guys had to learn how to perform with the orchestra, because it's completely
exactly,
different.
Exactly, yeah.
And the timbre of the instruments are different with an orchestra and
yep.
your group, as opposed to you guys just performing.
Yep, And, I mean, half of the time the orchestra isn't amplified, so we really have to keep it down.
Mm-hmm.
But when the orchestra is amplified, we still keep it down just because we're used to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope, are you going to come to the show? I hope.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to try to get over there for sure. Absolutely.
You're going to notice that Caribe is the only tune we do without orchestra. I mean, I guarantee you're going to notice a difference of the level.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we just open up, you know, and the audience realizes that too. It's
sure.
Like, wow, these guys can be loud. Yeah, it's all part of the deal. You know, we're musicians. We know how to show. We know when to shut up, and we know when to yell.
So, Well, hopefully you guys will come back to town just as your group and be able to play in a smaller venue. But this venue that you're going to be performing in Wednesday, August 7th, 6:30 p.m.,
yep.
Millennium Park. Everybody listening knows Millennium Park,
sure.
Downtown Chicago. It's a beautiful space. You're going to love the sound. The sound is like state of the art. It's an incredible scene. And it's called Mambo Kings with the Grant Park Orchestra, Hot Latin Nights. Of course, if anybody listening wants to get some advance tickets, they can get them for $26. All that money goes back, by the way, into the Grant Park Music Foundation. So that helps these performances continue on. So you're not just giving it to the city of Chicago. You're actually putting it back in to provide more programming down there. Get those tickets at gpmf.org, 312-742-7647. Richard, I really appreciate you jumping on today and previewing this concert. And like I said, hopefully you guys come back to town and make this a regular stop.
We're thrilled to be going because we usually just perform in an auditorium, you know, as part of a series of concerts or something. But this is a festival that is a famous festival, and we're just thrilled to be part of it.
Yeah, you're going to love it, and you're going to love the group, or you're going to love the audience.
Yep.
They're going to go crazy. I already
know.
Yeah. So it's going to be incredible. And should everybody, if they want to get more information, head over to mambokingdom.com?
Yeah, one word, mambokingdom.com. Yep.
And they have recordings up there. You can see videos. I mean, it's a great website, so check everything out. Richard, thanks for jumping on today, and I really appreciate you being on the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience.
Hey, thanks, and I'll see you next week.
Definitely. And everybody listening, I appreciate everyone listening. Of course, you can get more information at chicagojazz.com, chicagojazzmagazine.com. You can see the new issue that's coming up online, and also hear all these past podcasts and see some of our old video podcasts and our video show and our regular video show. We've got all that stuff, chicagojazz.com. And again, hopefully we will see you on Wednesday, August 7th. And if we don't, hopefully I will see you somewhere on the Chicago scene soon.